Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of our English feature program dedicated to Pope Benedict's pastoral visit to Sydney, Australia for the celebration of World Youth Day 2008. Coming up in just a moment, the Pope hails the ancient heritage of the Aboriginal people. Thousands of young pilgrims from across the globe provide a vibrant and colourful welcome for World Youth Day. And on track to become Australia's first saint, the Pope stops to pray at the tomb of Blessed Mary MacKillop.
On behalf of the Australian Government and the Australian people, it is my great honour to welcome His Holiness Pope Benedict XVI to Sydney, Australia, for this World Youth Day.
We welcome you among us as a man of faith and prayer, a man of learning, and a famous teacher who for decades has entered into dialogue with the other voices of our pluralist democracies.
As he arrives, we, the young people of the world, welcome to World Youth Day 2008, His Holiness, Pope Benedict XVI!
As you heard there, Pope Benedict on Thursday was officially welcomed to Sydney by Australia's Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, by the city's Cardinal George Pell, and by thousands of young pilgrims attending World Youth Day 2008. The Pope actually arrived in Sydney on Sunday, but spent a few days resting at a study centre outside the city until Wednesday evening. On Thursday morning, he received a 21-gun salute as he met with both the Prime Minister and Governor-General outside the elegant Gothic Government House before boarding a special cruise ship that took him around the harbour for a colourful ceremony with tens of thousands of young pilgrims gathered on the quayside for the World Youth Day celebrations. Aboriginal leaders were also on hand to welcome the Pope with their traditional music and dancing, showing him something of the native culture and way of life which first took root in Australia some 40,000 years ago. In his address to Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, Pope Benedict paid tribute to the ancient heritage of these indigenous people, and he praised the recent decision of the Australian government to apologise publicly for the devastation and injustices committed by the white settlers against the Aboriginal people.
The ancient heritage forms an essential part of the cultural landscape of modern Australia. Thanks to the Australian government's courageous decision to acknowledge the injustices committed against Indigenous people in the past, concrete steps are now being taken to achieve reconciliation based on mutual respect. Rightly, we are seeking to close the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians regarding life expectancy, educational achievement, and economic opportunity.
Sufferings endured by the original inhabitants of Australia were a recurring theme on Pope Benedict's first full day of activities in Sydney. Aboriginal elders wearing animal skins and painted faces welcomed the Pope as he prepared to board the boat waiting to take him around Sydney Bay, past the famous Opera House and into Barangaroo Harbour, where tens of thousands of young pilgrims had gathered for a colourful and festive welcome ceremony. Again, at the start of that celebration, the Pope acknowledged the injustices they suffered and the need for healing amongst all the citizens of Australia today.
I am deeply moved to stand on your land, knowing the suffering and injustices it has borne, but aware too of the healing and hope that are now at work
rightly bring pride to all Australian citizens, to the young Indigenous, Aboriginal, and Torres Strait Islanders, and the Tokelauans, I express my thanks for a stirring welcome through yours and heartfelt greetings to your peoples.
Gazing out at the multicoloured flags and multicultural crowds gathered before him, Pope Benedict said this World Youth Day offers a vibrant image of the universal church, urging these young people to reject the false idols of a greedy and exploitative consumer society. The Pope called on all his listeners to turn to Christ, the way, the truth, and the life.
The variety of nations and cultures from which you hail shows that indeed Christ's good news is for everyone. It has reached the ends of the earth. Yet I know too that a good number of you are still seeking a spiritual homeland. Some of you most welcome among us are not Catholic or Christian. To you, I wish to offer encouragement. Step forward into Christ's loving embrace. Recognize the church as your home. No one need remain on the outside, for from the day of Pentecost the church has been one and universal.
Pope Benedict there addressing thousands of young pilgrims gathered for a welcome ceremony in Sydney Harbour on Thursday. Sean Patrick Lovett is travelling with Pope Benedict on this, his ninth journey abroad. He sends more details now on the spectacular setting and the Pope's message at that meeting.
The trouble is, it's just so drop-dead gorgeous. The city of Sydney, I mean. So watching the welcome ceremony on Thursday afternoon was like looking at a series of picture postcards strung together in sequence. The papal boatercade gliding its way through Sydney Harbour from Rose Bay to Barangaroo, beneath the iconic Harbour Bridge and past the sculpturesque Opera House, the glittering city skyline in the distance. The multicoloured tapestry of young people waving and cheering from the shore. The Pope himself chatting amicably with the lucky few who were privileged to sail along with him. The flags of 170 nations giving added significance to the world dimension of World Youth Day. Greeted by Aboriginal elders and young Indigenous Australians as spiritual father rather than colonial invader, among the first sounds the Pope heard on his arrival, aside from the yelling and screaming that is, were the voices of a children's choir singing Tu es Petrus in the Gadigal language of the Sydney area. There were other signs too that this is a World Youth Day with strong Oceania overtones. The symbolic procession of the gospel carried to the Pope inside a carved miniature canoe in a reenactment of how the good news was brought by the first Christian missionaries to the islands of Tokelau. Constant references by both Cardinal Pell and the Pope in their discourses to the indigenous peoples, and the prominence given to Aboriginal rituals, dances and traditions in the welcome ceremony itself. Addressing the young people from a flaming red podium, the Pope spoke of the light and darkness of existence, from the awe-inspiring beauty of creation, of which humanity is the apex, to the wounds and scars in the environment and in our personal lives that indicate something is amiss.
Examples abound, as yourselves know. Among the more prevalent are alcohol and drug abuse, and the exaltation of violence and sexual degradation, often presented through television and the internet as entertainment. I ask myself, could anyone standing face to face with people who actually do suffer violence and sexual exploitation explain that these tragedies portrayed in virtual form are considered merely entertainment?
The Pope repeated his warning against the dangers of relativism that makes experience all important.
and he encouraged his young listeners to be witnesses to a vision of life where love endures, where gifts are shared, where unity is built, where freedom finds meaning in truth, and where identity is found in respectful communion. This, he concluded, is the work of the Holy Spirit.
This is a hope held out by the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is to bear witness to this reality that you were created anew at baptism and strengthened through the gifts of the Spirit at confirmation. Let this be the message that you bring from Sydney to the world.
It was a message that echoed the catecheses, or learning and sharing sessions, the young people have been attending in nearly 250 locations across the city and in 29 different languages. Sessions centered on the theme of the Holy Spirit and on mission. When the Pope left, this time by way of a more traditional motorcade, most of the young people stayed behind, eager to guzzle some good old Aussie grub and to rock around the clock with the many entertainment groups laid on for the occasion. After all, you're only young once. With the Pope in Australia, I'm Sean Patrick Lovett.
Among the church leaders from across the globe who are accompanying pilgrimages to this World Youth Day is English Cardinal and Archbishop of Westminster Cormac Murphy O'Connor. At the end of a busy day of catechesis, confessions and mass with young Catholics from the UK, he found time to tell me more about the Spirit of Sydney 2008.
Well, I think that it's, as it were, growing by the day. You see what I mean? The people, the young people now, they must be very tired arriving, but they've had their week's stay in different dioceses, and I've heard from our own youngsters how wonderfully they've been received by families. And our ones have been staying in the Parramatta diocese, which was a neighbouring diocese to Sydney, and now they're coming in to the city for the arrival of the Pope and all the rest of the festivities. But I think the first week they really have enjoyed. They've been thoroughly welcomed, very welcomed by the Catholic families here in Australia, certainly our own have, and I'm sure that's true for all the pilgrims. So that's been a great start. Then we had the opening mass celebrated by the Cardinal Pell, and again, great enthusiasm and prayerfulness as well from the young people. I've just been out today meeting our own pilgrims, about 300 of them from my own diocese, and they're just very, very happy. And what I'm impressed with is the seriousness and the kind of joy which they're finding in their visit here. Not just fun, though there's lots of fun. There's also the serious aspect of prayer, of reconciliation. We heard all their confessions today with other priests. It's really not only a pilgrimage, but a kind of retreat.
At the opening ceremony, we heard the Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, talking about these young people as pilgrims of peace. Do you think, really, they have a sense of this important mission, this role they must play in wider society?
I have no doubt that they will go away from this World Youth Day strengthened, not only in their own faith, but also in their desire to do something. In other words, to actually be promoters of reconciliation, peace, and a good way of life, a Christian way of life. And, 3 years has passed since the last one at Cologne. But most of the people who are coming this time will be new, as it were, new young people. And again, with a mission. And I've no doubt that there will be young men and young women who will come away certainly with the idea of seriously thinking about a vocation to priesthood or religious life.
You've been to other World Youth Day celebrations, haven't you?
This is my seventh. I've been to Santiago, Cologne, Paris, Rome, Chesterhover, Toronto, and this now in Australia. So, yes, I've experienced a lot of them. But they're all the same and different.
If you had to say, perhaps, what do you think could be most special about Sydney, about this World Youth Day taking place in a country so very, very far away from our European sense of church?
Well, I suppose, first of all, there's a greater sense of adventure, I think, of the young people, because they've had to save a lot of money, those who've come from Europe and from America to come here. So the numbers won't be quite as great as in Cologne or in Rome. But the ones who've come seem to me to be very committed young people, the ones I've met so far. And so I think that's the first point I'd make. The second is, of course, Australia is comparatively a new country, and there's a freshness about Sydney, Australia, which perhaps the older capitals haven't got. So I think the young people are relating to this new scene, which they've only seen on, as it were, on television or in the media generally, in a way that they're finding very exciting.
And my thanks there to the Archbishop of Westminster, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor. Earlier on Thursday, before heading for Sydney Harbour, Pope Benedict paid a visit to the tomb of one of the patrons of this World Youth Day, Blessed Mary MacKillop, who is on track to become Australia's first saint. Born in Melbourne after her family emigrated to Australia from Scotland, Mary founded the Sisters of St. Joseph, or Brown Joeys as they're affectionately known, dedicated to working with the poorest and most marginalised families. Their feisty foundress and mother superior was briefly excommunicated by the local bishop in 1871 for her unswerving commitment to a life of poverty and simplicity, living not in a monastery but in the outback, alongside the people her sisters were serving. But in 1995, Pope John Paul II presided at her beatification in Sydney. And on Thursday this week, Pope Benedict took time at the start of his visit to meet with sisters at the Blessed Mary MacKillop Memorial Chapel and to spend a few moments in prayer at her tomb.
Yes, Mary was born in Melbourne, which was then part of New South Wales.
Josephite sister Maria Casey is the vice postulator for the cause of canonisation of Mary MacKillop. She tells us more about the life of this extraordinarily determined woman.
Her father had been in a seminary in Rome for a number of years, but ill health and other problems forced him to return to Scotland. He was very, very well educated, and so he gave Mary a lot of her early education. Her mother came from the MacDonald clan in Roy Bridge area of Scotland, very strong, devout Catholics. When her mother was pregnant with Mary, one of the Franciscan fathers gave her a small relic of the Holy Cross, which was very significant because later in life Mary took the title Mary of the Cross and was known as Sister Mary of the Cross. Her childhood was a troubled one in the sense that her father was very idealistic and a wonderful man, but was not able to keep a job because his ideals impelled him to speak out. So he often lost his job and the means then of supporting his family. They moved frequently from place to place. So when Mary was very young, she had to give up whatever education she was having and go out to work to support the family. In her late teens, she went to Panola in South Australia to be a governess, again to earn some money to support her family. But she saw there that there was absolutely no education for the poor, and especially the Catholics, who were very discriminated against. She also saw the Aboriginal children in the area that nobody looked after. And in her spare time, she used to take care of a couple of these Aboriginal children. She wanted to become a religious, but when she looked around, at that time there were very few religious congregations that seemed to meet what her ideals were. So she was blessed in meeting this priest, Father Tennyson Woods, who also had an ideal of providing education for the isolated and the lonely. And when she founded her congregation, and it started in a stable at Panola, she had this vision that her sisters would not live in large houses, as most of the other congregations did by their rule. They would live in twos and threes, and they would go wherever the need was. And so to achieve that, she had what she called central government, that there would be a superior general, as it was called in those days, and that she would be responsible for placing the sisters. That was contrary to the way the things were done in those days, because the bishop had that power. And so that ideal, where she wanted to be free to move where the needs were, but also to have this central government, came into conflict with the bishops. Her local bishop at first was very supportive. He died and his successor was very supportive. And one of the bishops from Bathurst invited her to send some sisters. But when they got there, he decided that he wanted to change the rule that had some approbation, so that he would be totally in charge. The sisters were given the opportunity to make a decision whether they wanted to stay under a changed rule or stay with Mary. One sister felt compelled to stay behind because some young women were beginning to join that particular group. So from that, a new congregation formed, the Sisters of St. Joseph of Perthful. And eventually from them, four other separate diocesan congregations where the bishop was. As time went on, they became what's called pontifical institutes, which gave them the kind of government that Mary had wanted in the first place.
But Mary's conflicts with local priests and bishops continued, and for a brief while she was even excommunicated, leaving many of her sisters to be looked after by the Jesuits and some Jewish and Protestant supporters. When the excommunication was lifted a few months later, Mary went to Rome to see Pope Pius IX and get a constitution for her order set down in writing. But not content to sit around and wait while this lengthy process took place, she travelled around Europe, learning more about how education was being most effectively used to lift people out of poverty in other countries. Back in Australia, she continued her pioneering work, and she died in 1909 as the Mother Superior of her Josephite sisters. Today, the order numbers around 900 sisters plus over 4,000 lay associates who assist in various aspects of the sisters' ministry. While education remains a strong focus of their work, the charism of Blessed Mary MacKillop continues in many other projects with the poorest and most marginalised people in Australia today. Sister Maria Casey again.
Mary also said that she should never see a need without trying to do something. So while the education was the main charism, it was to be free for those who couldn't afford it. For those who could, they paid a little bit. The sisters depended for their livelihood on the little bits of money that the people could give them, and for the rest they begged. Other poor people she did not neglect. She had a home for mothers who were abandoned, for orphan children. She also helped prostitutes and those that wanted to come out of jail and start a new life. So she had quite a big social work aspect to her work. But yes, her, in terms of charism, it was to live poorly as the poor lived, in houses like they lived in. So that as the congregation developed and some of the sisters went to mining towns, for instance, they lived in tents the same way as the miners. They moved when they moved. They went along, and a lot of our foundations were along railway lines so that the sisters could travel back and forth. They not only taught in the schools, but they visited every family, which was unheard of for sisters in those days. The apostolate with Aboriginal people was delayed. Mary had tried several times to get a foundation in Daly River in the Northern Territory area. Various circumstances prevented her from getting there, but in the 1960s, our sisters went there with a formal foundation, and it has spread now to several other centres. And the reception by the Aboriginal people has been marvellous. They say, you are our kind of people. And they recognise something of the respect that each of them have for the land and for the culture. They set up what they call two-way schools, that there was side by side with the sisters teaching, there were some Aboriginal women that they trained who would teach the Aboriginal culture and their way of life, so that they had the two side by side. And it has become a model for a part of the university that was developed, Notre Dame Australia. And it's established now in the Kimberley area very successfully, with the result that there are many Aboriginal teachers who train in their own way and can now go back to their communities. And so the education is doing very, very well.
Well, I see Mary McKillop as a big-hearted woman, full of love and full of compassion, who had a passion in her life to make a difference. And it came from her God centre.
That's Sister Monica Cavanaugh, another Josephite sister and spokeswoman at the Order's headquarters in Sydney. She talked to our former colleague Catherine Smybert following the opening of a special exhibition entitled In the Footsteps of Mary McKillop, expected to draw thousands of young pilgrims during these World Youth Day celebrations.
There's a little saying we've got on our banners in the chapel, and it says, if you have love in your heart, you will have God with you. And I think that sums Mary McKillop up so well. She had love, and that love came from the God Centre within her.
You gave us a little bit of a taste of what they'll be doing while they're here, the pilgrims, but you know, maybe just a step by step as well, just walk us through like the virtual pilgrimage, what is on offer to each pilgrim as they arrive here, and yeah, what they'll encounter.
Well, Catherine, the basic experience we'd call the pilgrimage experience, and the young people will gather on Shaw College Oval, which is next door, and they will walk around into Mount Street and enter the chapel. And when they enter the chapel, we have four banners in there depicting the four things that we saw were important about World Youth Day. They'll depict Mary the person, this woman of great love, Mary the witness, Mary of the cross, and Mary the pilgrim. And so we hope, and there will be some music playing there with songs around her, with some quiet time. And then we will also give them the opportunity to bring a petition with them and to leave that at Mary's tomb. And then they'll have an opportunity to pray at the tomb in whatever way they feel comfortable with. They'll come out of the chapel, and on the walls at the back of the museum are five panels depicting the spirit of Mary McKillop alive today. Then they'll walk out past Elmer Cottage, which was the home of Mary McKillop, along to the past Tennyson Woods Centre, which was the original chapel built by Mary McKillop, and then along outside into the William Street. We are expecting that a number of the pilgrims will actually add on to that, the special exhibition, so that when they come out of the chapel, they'll actually come on in to this special exhibition centre that we have here, which once again picks up those themes of Mary, woman of love, Mary the pilgrim, Mary the witness, and Mary of the cross.
My thanks there to Sister Monica Cavanaugh talking to Catherine Smybert. And earlier you heard Sister Maria Casey, the vice postulator for the cause of canonisation of Blessed Mary McKillop. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Do stay tuned to Vatican Radio for full coverage of Pope Benedict's activities and the events of World Youth Day as they unfold there in Sydney, Australia, over the coming days. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.